Welcome all, and welcome to another episode of the Paranormal Patriot. Thank you for joining me this week, as always. Wearing the tinfoil hat and an army helmet, apparently, my name is Tom Velasquez. So we're just going to get into it, because I knew it was coming. I was wrong. I will admit when I'm wrong. Justin, this is for you. I was wrong about the invasion of Ukraine. Literally, the show came out, and I think it was that night they invaded. It was like he was waiting for my show to get released before he says, okay, now let's go in. Let's prove him wrong. So, yes, I am wrong. I was very surprised that he went in, and not only did Putin and the Russian military invade Ukraine, they did it with much more force than I expected. But you gotta hand it to the Ukrainians. The Ukrainians remind me a lot of Americans. They're resilient. They love their country and they are willing to fight for it. Right now, the great Russian military, everybody thought this is done. They start invading Monday, Tuesday. It's done by the weekend. They will take over Kiev, and the government's going to fall. The country will be handed over to Russia. That's not the case. Right now, the Russian military is having a hard time getting any type of traction in Ukraine. Right now, as of the recording of this show on Saturday night, Kiev is still in Ukrainian hands, and they are repelling numerous attacks on the capital. Yes, there's a lot of damage. Yes, there are casualties. But I think they expected it to be kind of like the Gulf War I, where basically they just roll into town in very, very limited, sporadic fighting with not a lot of resistance, and they are being shown that that's not the case. And the citizens of Ukraine that are staying there to fight for their country are a big reason why. So I want to state one last time, I was wrong. They did invade the Ukraine. I will accept that. Now, we have to figure out what's going on and what is going to happen in the future, because I think this, and again, you know, I was wrong. I'm almost little hesitant to say this, but I think especially the way this is going now, where the Russians are having such a hard time gaining any foothold in that country, I think this whole thing could escalate. Now, the reason, according to Moscow, that the Russians are not moving forward very quickly and taking large chunks of land is they were supposed to have negotiation talks. Well, they said, well, we held back our troops for the negotiations or during the negotiation talks. Those talks failed. Russian forces, apparently, though, according to the Pentagon, didn't seem to halt their advances. This is what is suggesting a much slower advance, and that this advance wasn't intentional, or this slowdown wasn't intentional. This looks as if the Russians thought they would have an easy go of it, and it's turning into a nightmare. Now, this slow Russian advance might be explained by the lack of supply lines also. The Kremlin and the Russian military leadership, well, again, they obviously expected a quick victory, but the Ukrainians, as they're putting up their fierce resistance, these Russian forces, they haven't had an opportunity to establish support zones, that these zones, they could be used to refuel the fight at the front. They could be used to refuel the tanks, refuel the convoy trucks, refuel, resupport, or resupply the troops. But it does not appear that they were able to generate or create enough supply lines because of all the fierce resistance. Now, back to the negotiation talks where the Russians said, look, we weren't moving. We're on a ceasefire. We weren't moving our troops while these negotiations were in discussion. Well, once the negotiations failed, that's when we moved our troops again. That's why everything's going so slowly. The Ukrainian government contradicted that statement. So it's basically, who do you believe now? Now, the war in Ukraine is essentially being fought on three fronts. So right now, there is fighting to the east in Kharkiv, I believe it's called, which is the second largest city in the Ukraine. They're fighting in Kiev right now, and they're fighting to the south, where Russian forces are invading from Crimea, and they have captured that territory. But here's the thing. Again, I keep going back to the Russians thought this would be an easy victory. Right now, roughly by what we can gather with our intelligence, there are approximately 150,000 Russian forces that have gathered on the border of Ukraine. In the first couple days of the Russian invasion, only about a third of those forces, which is approximately 60 battalion tactical groups, had been deployed inside of Ukraine. So, was it a tactical error by the Russian military strategists that they only brought in a third of their troops that are stationed on the border? Again, thinking this is going to be a cakewalk, we're not going to need all these forces. It could have been a strategic blunder, for that matter. But now the British Ministry of Defense stated that the Russian formations are bypassing major Ukrainian population centers, but leaving forces behind to encircle and isolate them. Now that, according to the Ministry of Defense, is a bold move, but that move could backfire should the bypassing forces fail to achieve their goals and have to fall back into contested areas. The Ukrainian Ministry of Defense claimed that Ukrainian air defenses have shot down two IL-76 transport aircraft carrying Russian paratroopers. The IL-76 is roughly the equivalent of the American C-17 Globemaster. So the Russian ground forces appear to be stalled and facing much more resistance than they anticipated. The Russian Air Force, well, they have yet to achieve air superiority over Ukraine. They have suffered several downed aircraft by Ukrainian air defenses and fighter jets. If you've been following this, you've heard of the Ghost of Kiev, the ace fighter pilot. I think its last count is 6 or 7 Russian fighter pilots he has shot down in just the first couple days of the battle for Ukraine. So the Russians, you know, they're struggling. And now you're starting to see more attacks on civilian targets. Again, if you've been watching the footage of what's going on there, you have undoubtedly seen the video of a Russian missile striking an apartment complex in Kiev. But now the Greek Ministry of Foreign Affairs has reported the deaths of 2 Greek nationals and the wounding of 6, including a child, near the village of Sartana in southern Ukraine. So does this mean that the Russians see that this battle is not going anywhere near what they have planned? And is it frustration now that they are starting to strike civilian targets? Or, and maybe this is to go hand in hand, is this a fear campaign? We are going to start striking civilians in order to scare the Ukrainians into submission. Whatever the answer is to that, this is a very disturbing uptick in the hostilities in Ukraine. Before, it was, you know, we're going to take out military targets, high-value targets. They, for the most part, were leaving the civilians alone. Now, you'd had civilians dying, but that's because the civilians are fighting back. Now, it looks like the Russians are beginning to target more civilian-populated areas. And that's scary. Because that's either going to do one of two things. That's going to destroy the resolve of the Ukrainians, or it's going to strengthen the resolve of the Ukrainians. And listen, I think it's going to be the latter, because the Ukrainians, they are proud people. I remember when I worked years ago, I was a store manager at a retail store down in the Detroit area. In the area that I was in, there is a very, very large Ukrainian population there. I worked with a lot of younger Ukrainian men and women. And when I say younger, 18, 19 to maybe 22, 23, 24, they loved they still love their homeland. They still speak the language. They can speak multiple languages. Their family is still in the Ukraine, and they go back there all the time. They are a proud people. They will not just lay down and give up their country. They are going to fight for it. So I don't know what's going to happen in the Ukraine right now. I know that the battles, the fighting, has been much more fierce than even the media believed. I said they weren't going to do it, but, you know, I love military history. I love military strategy. And I thought it'd be a cakewalk if they did go. And I'm very surprised at the amount of resistance that the Russians are encountering right now. But that brings us to the next question. What's next? Again, we have no idea. We don't have a crystal ball telling us what exactly is next on the agenda. But I can tell you one thing. China, they are salivating right now watching this, because honestly, Russia is invading the Ukraine. And now Putin, take him for, believe this or don't believe it, I don't know what you think of the guy. But Vladimir Putin has stated it is not his goal to occupy the Ukraine. He says that the reason that the Russian army and the Russian military is going into the Ukraine is to demilitarize and denazify the Ukrainian government and save the Ukrainian people. Well, I'm not really sure that that's working, because if that were the case, then don't you think the Ukrainian people would be welcoming them with open arms? That's not the case. The Ukrainian people want these Russians out of their country. So if that's the case, if Putin did not plan to occupy Ukraine, he's doing it essentially as a humanitarian effort, he severely miscalculated the desire of the Ukrainian people. But again, right now, I believe China is looking at this, and they're saying, we are painting a target, a huge target on Taiwan, because that's the next thing that's going to happen. I think you are going to see China start really, let's just call it what it is, invading Taiwan. China has been provoking Taiwan, and they've made no mistake that they want Taiwan as their own. And I think they're looking at the world situation right now with Russia, and they're seeing that really, what is happening to Russia? They're being condemned, and people are mad at them, and there's protests. But really, what is happening? What Russia has done is they have shown the world that NATO is a paper tiger. They have no control over anything. They have no strength, and they're essentially just a figurehead. That is what Russia has proven. China's looking at this going, well, let's see. Nobody is really doing anything to Russia. Yeah, the United States is throwing out some financial sanctions against the Russian banks. And what is that really going to do, honestly? We're going to get into the U.S. response here in just a little bit. But China's looking at this and saying, yeah, this is something we need to do now. I don't think China was going to do it during the genocide games. That would be a really bad look. Right now, the world really doesn't care about China anymore. It's all about, rightfully so, the Ukraine-Russia conflict. So China's just sitting in the background, just basking in all this, going, okay, I think it's almost time we do our own invading. So now, this list I'm going to give you of what happens next is not mine. It's a conglomeration of what I've been reading the quote-unquote pundits say that is happening, but I've taken the best things and researched them and did some... I'm not a stupid guy. I can figure this stuff out pretty good. So I've been figuring, okay, if this happens, that will happen. And this is what I've come up with. So right now, Russia has invaded Ukraine. I think the next thing to happen is China is going to invade Taiwan. Now, a lot of the people, a lot of the quote-unquote pundits are saying China will invade Taiwan with Russia's help. I don't think Russia right now wants to get involved in another conflict. They're having enough time dealing with the Ukrainians, and I think they're just going to lay low. I think they're going to stick to the Ukrainian thing for now. Now, there is talk that Vladimir Putin may go against, and what I mean by that is retaliate against the NATO countries. You know, Poland is in the crosshairs right now. And I'll be honest with you, you don't want to mess with the Polacks. You do not want to mess with them because they are, if not as, even more resilient than the Ukrainians. I do believe China will invade Taiwan. That I do. So if my track record lately is any indication, China and Taiwan are going to sign a peace agreement in the next day or two. That's about how it's going. But I truly believe China is going to invade Taiwan. And if that happens, you've got a war in Ukraine. You've got a war in Taiwan. You've got Europe in Asia, the Pacific, at war. Because somebody's going to come in defense of Taiwan. Is that going to be Japan? Is it going to be Australia? Is it going to be who knows? Somebody will come in and help out Taiwan against China. I'm really surprised that we don't have, and what I mean by we, I should say NATO, we don't have any type of troops fighting with the Ukrainians. I get it. I get it. And I don't want to put anybody in harm's way. But the fact that I have not seen or heard of another country sending troops in, yeah, we're sending troops to Germany, we're surrounding the area, we're sending them to NATO countries, but we're not sending them to the fight. And again, I think that's a good thing. My biggest beef with this whole thing is our country, and most importantly, this administration right now is more concerned about the border of a foreign country than our southern border. And again, the next segment here is going to talk about the U.S. response and what I think is really happening there. But things are not looking up. Right now, in Europe, this is the biggest military conflict since World War II. It's hard to believe. We had the Serbs and the Bosnians, I believe it was, in the 90s, early 2000s going at it. And apparently this is bigger. But I don't think it's going to be over. You know, part of me thinks, you know, you got Vladimir Putin. And listen, I think the media over here is demonizing Vladimir Putin. I'm not sticking up for the guy. I'm not saying, oh my gosh, yeah, I would love to have Vladimir Putin as my leader. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, be careful what you where you're hearing your news from. We've know, especially here in the States, we know how manipulative our news media can be. Hell, for all we know, Putin may be invading Ukraine to get all the dirt on the Bidens in Burisma, in Hunter Biden's misdoings in Ukraine. We don't know that. We don't know exactly what's going on, but I can tell you things don't look good. I don't know how bad they're going to get, but they may get very bad. We may get drawn into this, and there's a lot of people talking that this could be the beginning of World War III. I mean, let's look at it seriously here. We've got the Russian-Ukraine conflict that is taking up every ounce of news. Again, you are not hearing anything about China. China is just laying low right now. And who knows, that could be part of the plan. Russia, go ahead, you do your invasion of Ukraine. You know, we'll divert the world's attention over there while we get ready to invade Taiwan. And oh, by the way, North Korea has just shot a missile near South Korea. It's an unidentified missile. I just came out as I was recording the show. North Korea is now flexing its muscles. And again, you have to ask yourself, where was this during the Donald Trump presidency? It wasn't there. Because these countries knew that Donald Trump meant business. Donald Trump knew how to negotiate with these people. He knew how to talk to them. And, you know, I can only imagine him talking to Putin. Look, if you invade Ukraine, we're coming after you and we're going to level you. You know, China, during the Trump presidency, you really didn't hear much. You didn't hear them with their war rhetoric that in their bashing of America like you do now with Biden in office. North Korea, holy cow, North Korea shut up. They said, nope, we don't want anything to do with this guy. So for the Democrats that think that Trump was in cahoots with Russia and that Russia wanted Trump in, there's no way. I guarantee you, the world powers that be, you know, we'll call them the Axis at this point, just for World War II terms, your Iranians, your North Koreans, your Chinese, your Russians, they wanted Joe Biden in because they know Joe Biden is weak. And coming up on the next segment, we're going to talk about the American response and NATO as a whole, their response. Which basically, if I just went on to the next segment and said, there's no response, and cut the segment off, it'd be pretty accurate. But I need you guys to really, really, not that I don't want you to focus on what's happening in Ukraine, but I want you to keep an eye on other areas of the world. I want, especially the Pacific area, Asia, China, Taiwan, North Korea. Look at what's going on over there. Don't fall for the diversion that is happening in Russia. Alrighty, everybody. I'm going to take a quick break right now. We're going to come back, and I'm going to talk to you about the U.S. and NATO's response to what's happening in Ukraine, because everybody needs to hear this. So, sit back, relax, open that mind. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll be right back.
Hello, and welcome to the Ohio Hauntings and Legends podcast. We will be taking you to places you have never dreamt of going. Hundreds, if not thousands, of haunted and abandoned locations. We will visit with the paranormal from your nightmares and try to understand the unexplained. Ohio alone has 88 counties within our state, and virtually each one of those counties has a story to tell. Ohio's history is bloodstained throughout its history. We will be covering more than just Ohio. We will cover the state you live in, the country. Trust me. There are thrills, chills, and we are upping the fright factor with each new stop we make. We will be traveling the world, the globe, looking for the strange, the mysterious, and the frightening. Mostly, we will find the unexplainable. Many of these episodes are genuine. Others are legend or hearsay. Believe those that you choose, or believe in none. It is your choice. Just get comfortable, sit back, dim the lights, and listen.
From what you told me, maybe you want me all alone. But it's all you show me, I ain't the only one that be giving you love. I know I say I'm open to doing what we say is okay. A place to escape, erase all the pain. Taking off your chain, saying not to wait. Grabbing on my face, yeah, I say I don't mind. Telling myself all night.
You know, over the break, I've come to a realization. Now, during the recording of this show, I have a listener. His name is Justin. It's funny because if I'm not mistaken, he was listening to the Paranormal Patriot. He lives in my area. He was listening to the Paranormal Patriot and then ends up, you know, him and my son are online all the time playing on the PS4. And he was messaging me and giving me some information about what was happening with China. You know, hey, you're not talking about them. You're not hearing about them in North Korea. And I've come to the realization, and this is where you guys come in. This show is better when you guys interact, because I'm getting information from you. I'm hearing I'm reading and giving all of my listeners what the listeners of this show are interested in. So you need to really start getting involved more in this show. And I'm not trying to be this disparaging, you know, parent that's always on you, but it's a better show when you guys are involved. So again, send me those questions, send me what you've got on your mind. Get a hold of me at ghostseeker4@charter.net and make this show your show even more so than it is now. So Justin, thank you for the input, very well received. So we talked about what's going on in Ukraine. Now let's talk about what's going on with the response, or should I say lack of response. I can put this into two categories. We have the NATO response. NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, was set up after World War II to stop situations like this. They didn't do a thing. Again, if Russia did anything, they exposed NATO as a paper tiger, as nothing. They're just there as a figurehead. They're there as just an organization to collect money from the United States. That's all they are, because they have done nothing. They haven't sent any countries in to help the Ukrainians. We're sending them into NATO-aligned countries, Germany, Poland, but that's as far as we go. So what is their response? The response is nothing. We're gonna condemn the invasion of Ukraine. Okay, well, that didn't do anything to stop the invasion. We'll put some sanctions on them. Listen, again, the Biden administration, I'm going to tell you right now, the Biden administration is absolutely loving this, for the simple reason that it's diverting the attention away from the ineptness of this administration. It is taking deflecting all the news about the economy, about the southern border, about inflation, about gas prices. You don't hear about it anymore, except, and this is the narrative, and I knew this was going to happen. You're now seeing every news station, be it national or be it a local news station, say, be prepared for higher fuel prices, higher food prices, and supply chain issues due to the Ukrainian and Russian conflict. That is the narrative now. None of this was Joe Biden's fault. None of this. It's all this Russian-Ukrainian conflict. That is what's causing it. Totally disregarding the fact that we've got 7.5%, almost 8% inflation. Gas prices are well over a dollar more than they were when Trump was in office. The economy is, if you call it stagnant, you're giving it a good grade, which it's not. It's dying. We're going to blame this on the Russian-Ukrainian conflict because they can now. And this is not just the Biden administration. This is the deep state. This is part of the Great Reset, everybody. They were looking for something to divert the attention, to deflect it away from, hey, this is what we're doing. We're raising inflation. We're killing the economy. We're raising fuel prices. We're just going to push towards green energy. They had no way to deflect it and give a reason why until now. This is their reason. You sit there and you watch Joe Biden try and talk tough to Putin. And unless you're an idiot, I can tell you right now how those conversations are going. It's Joe Biden totally going on a tangent, telling Putin about all the kids rubbing on his legs. And Putin just saying, listen, old man, you have dementia. This is how it's going to be. And then you got Biden on TV trying to sound tough, putting sanctions on Russia. And what are these sanctions doing? Are they stopping the flow of money into Russia? No. Are they hurting the Russian economy so they cannot continue to fund their military existence? No. What they're doing is they're picking and choosing what banks and what financial institutions and what businesses we can and can't work with here. What is that going to do? I understand that some of these may be funding Russia, helping to pay for their military. You really want to hurt them? Cut off their pipeline. The same one that Biden on his first day gave authorization for Russia. So right now, we in the United States are importing 595,000 barrels of oil a day from Russia. That's day one of Biden's administration. What did he do? He killed the Keystone Pipeline, took away our energy independence, and gave Russia the authorization for the Nord Stream pipeline, basically just funneling money through that pipeline to Russia to build their military. Think about this. I really want you to think about this. You have a president of a country that is energy independent, and he is really, really keen. He is all about environmentalism. He wants to save the environment. Great. Good cause. So he kills every ounce of energy dependence that the country he is running has. And he gives it to another country that is essentially an enemy of our country. He gives authorization for that country to build a Nord Stream pipeline that is basically flowing oil and natural gas into Europe. And in return, they're just sending dozens and dozens of millions of dollars in rubles back through that pipeline. And we're sitting here going, hey, Saudi Arabia, can you increase production for us? We really need it. And we're importing oil from the country that we essentially are at odds with. Tell me how much sense that makes. And tell me that there's not a deliberate example of why, other than the obvious. I mean, why would you do that other than you are actively trying to destroy this country? You have taken, again, I want you to understand what I'm talking about. This pipeline that Joe Biden authorized, essentially, for Russia, if you listen during the whole Trump presidency, was our mortal enemy. He gave him the okay. Yeah, go ahead. Get that thing up and running. Hurry up. We need all that oil because we're shutting down every ounce of energy production in our country. Does that make sense? Or is that something someone who is actively trying to destroy this country would do? I'm going to tell you right now, the latter is the true example of that. So we basically give them this cash cow in the Nord Stream pipeline. And we're shocked. We're shocked that they are now emboldened because they've got all this money to increase their military funding. Now they're emboldened. They're like, yes, let's bring back the former Soviet Union. Meanwhile, we're over here going, hey, Saudi Arabia, throw us a bone. Give us more oil. And Saudi Arabia is like, uh-uh, you're on your own, dude. So we're importing $595,000 a barrel from our enemy. Are you kidding me? We are helping fund this war against Ukraine, who we're telling people we want to protect, that the Russians are wrong. So what do? We could essentially shut down that pipeline. We could say, hey, you know what? Let's open up our own energy. Let's open back up our energy reserves here. Germany, Poland, who get the majority of the Russian natural gas and oil, do not get any from Russia. We will provide it to you. Shut that economy down. No, what do? We're sanctioning banks. We're sanctioning businesses as if that's really going to do anything. Oh, nope. We in America here cannot do business with that bank in Russia. Great. 99.9% of America does not do business with that bank. And we think that's going to hurt them. But now, I want to play for you a montage of, how do I even want to put it? The Biden administration is so inept. How inept is it? Really, it's so inept that they can't get their story straight about these sanctions. During the whole sanction conversation, all we're hearing from the Biden administration is how these sanctions are designed to deter Russia from invading the Ukraine. Well, then you get old Sleepy Joe coming on national, worldwide TV telling us these things, we didn't plan on them even working. Listen to this montage. The first clip you're going to hear is Joe Biden telling the world, and these weren't going to work. We kind of knew that. And then you're going to hear all of the Democratic, all of the big talkers basically telling the world that this is what we need to do to stop the invasion of Ukraine. Listen to the ineptness in this administration. And for those of you who don't live in the United States of America, this is what we deal with every day. Listen to this.
No one expected the sanctions to prevent anything from happening. It has to show. This is going to take time.
So Joe Biden's out there just popping off these sanctions left and right, being big old, tough, old Sleepy Joe, and then goes up and says, nobody expected these things to work. It's going to take time. Really? Then why weren't we doing this months ago? Then these sanctions may work today, and it may have spared the hundreds of Ukrainian and Russian citizens and soldiers' lives. But yeah, we didn't expect them to work. We're just going to continue to issue these sanctions, but they're not going to do a thing. I mean, essentially, that's what they're saying. So Joe Biden's out there saying, these aren't going to work. But listen to what the administration has been saying, why they're putting these sanctions out.
The president believes that sanctions are intended to deter. And in order for them to work to deter,
this
they have
Jake
to
Sullivan.
Be set up in a way where if Putin moves, then the costs are imposed.
But if you believe Putin has made up his mind,
this is
what leverage
Harris.
Do you really have? Why not put those sanctions in place now?
The purpose of the sanctions has always been and continues to be deterrence. The deterrence effect of these sanctions is still a meaningful one, especially because, remember also, we still sincerely hope that there is a diplomatic path out of this moment.
The purpose of the sanctions
okay,
in the first instance is to try to deter Russia from going to war. As soon as you trigger them, that deterrent is gone. And until the last minute, as long as we can try to bring a deterrent effect to this, We're going to try to do that.
Our hope is that Putin will decide to de-escalate, that he will feel the threat of the sanctions, what the impact will be on the Russian economy, on the Russian people, on the people who surround him. They are meant to have a deterrent impact, that he will feel the weight of being a pariah in the global community. The way we look at this, broadly speaking, and Dilip touched on this a little bit, is that we do see them as having a deterrent impact, right? It doesn't mean they're 100% foolproof.
So what is it, Biden administration? Did we realize that they're not going to work, or did we fully expect these to be a deterrent? Because how it looks right now is prior to the invasion, this was a deterrent. Then Putin invaded Ukraine. Oh, we got to tell him this was not meant to be a deterrent. So Biden gets up there and just starts talking gibberish. Yeah, this wasn't meant to be a deterrent. These things take time. And the reporter that asked Kamala Harris, she had it right on. I mean, she was spot on. Okay, why didn't we put these sanctions in earlier? Well, it's a deterrent. That's their response. Just talking out of the side of their mouth, talking out of the side of their mouth. So at this point, Russia has got free rein to do what they want. We're going to position troops all around Ukraine. We're not going to bring them in there. And again, I don't want our troops in harm's way. But my God, does this not look like 1938 all over again when Hitler invaded Poland? And it moved on from there. And it grew. And it grew. And it grew. And we all know what happened after that. I can't tell you what is going to happen next. I don't know for sure. If I had that crystal ball, I'd be broadcasting this show from a tropical beach somewhere as opposed to 20-degree Michigan at the moment. So I don't know. But I can tell you that it doesn't look good. It really doesn't. I think China's just waiting in the wings, just going to just say, oh, hey, here we go. Hopefully nobody notices right away. And you've got two fronts. You've got a European and in a Pacific, Asian Pacific front, a battlefront. Again, doesn't that strike you as similar to World War II? Could we be on the verge of World War III? Absolutely. I think we're closer than we've been in a long time. I mean, Russia, when I was growing up in the 80s, Russia and the United States were not friendly. I mean, we'd have nuclear drills where, you know, the bell would go off. Oh, my gosh, it's a nuclear war. Everybody under their desk. Oh, okay. That's going to help. But literally, that's what we grew up with in the 80s. I couldn't imagine growing up during the Bay of Pigs whole fiasco in the 1960s. I mean, if I was growing up in the 60s, I could honestly believe that I would think every breath I took might be my last because I could be just vaporized in a nuclear explosion. We're getting pretty damn close to that right now. The world is, man, it's on a tipping point. And if you believe in aliens, let's start channeling and getting these aliens over here and saying, hey, stop this potential massacre. I mean, this may get ugly. So, again, keep an eye on the Russian-Ukraine situation, but also make sure you keep an eye on China and North Korea. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to change the subject, and I want everybody to listen to what I'm going to talk about because it's going to affect us. It's going to affect us all. You're listening to The Paranormal Patriot. I'll be right back.
Time. Do you feel my love? Yeah, I know you're mine. I'm so sorry. Say it one more time.
Stop. Do you feel my love? Of Nightmares.
Hey, everybody. This is Rick Ness, host of the Stuff of Nightmares podcast. Ever since I was a child, I was fascinated by stories of the paranormal and the unknown. Reading about encounters with Bigfoot, the Jersey Devil, UFOs, or even living in a house where spirits roamed intrigued me. As an adult, reading true crime stories and watching true crime documentaries made me realize that monsters don't just live in your closet or under your bed. Monsters might just live next door. Come with me on a journey to the unknown and the unthinkable, where the things that people do to each other are just as frightening as the things we can't explain. Every episode, I will delve into the world of the paranormal and lesser-known heinous true crime. Each story of the unknown will be true first-hand accounts told by the person that had the experience or submitted to me to be read for them. You can listen to the Stuff of Nightmares podcast on the website at www.thestuffofnightmarespodcast.show, your favorite podcast app, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, I want to change topics here. So this past year, back in February, just over a year ago, February 2nd, I lost the closest person to me, which would be my mother. I mean, I'm close to my wife and everything. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that in terms of people who have died and passed on, she was the closest to me. And I'm telling you, it doesn't get any easier. I'm telling you, the first year is rough because that's a year of firsts. First birthday without her, first holiday without her, first Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's without her, you know. And I've been almost in, well, let's be honest, I lost her February 2nd. And the first part of April, I was right behind her. I was pretty much dead of COVID. And just by the grace of God, you can hear my voice today. So death and what is happening as we die and what happens after we die has been on my mind, and I've been doing a lot of research on that. Well, just recently, the first ever recording of a dying brain has been recorded, and it reveals we might live some of our best memories in our last moments. So as I sat there watching my mother die, she was probably reliving, according to what this recording is saying and how we're interpreting it, she may have been reliving the best moments of her life. That is comforting to me. Because I remember walking out of that room, and I can't remember if I told my brother or sister. That day is kind of a blur to me. But I remember telling them, I don't want my family there when I'm dying like that. That was horrific. I mean, if you've ever been around anybody that has died, you're watching them die. You're watching them gasp for air and struggle to breathe, and you know their extremities are getting colder and colder because their blood pressure is dropping. It's horrific, and I don't want my family to go through that, to remember, you know, my last vision of my mother was her gasping for breath, and we knew what was coming, and you know, all of us were in the room, and we're just like, come on, Mom, stop breathing. You're helpless. You know, they're struggling to breathe. They're just taking a deep breath and trying to breathe in, and their breathing is so slow and so shallow, and their chest is rattling. And, you know, we finally got the nurse in and said, is there anything you can do? And she's like, we've given her enough or as much painkillers as we can. And, you know, she's, I guess I can try and give her some of this. And it was just like with my grandpa. I watched my grandpa pass. And, you know, ironically, my mother was worse. A worse thing to see. It was just, it was expected, but it was unexpected. But, I mean, I honestly believe the nurse gave her just something to just let her go. And I will forever be thankful for her to do that, for doing that. Because, I mean, for the last hour of her life, we were sitting there and just, please, please just go, Mom. Go and be in peace. She could have been reliving her best moments and didn't want to go. But what happened is, again, scientists, they accidentally captured our most complex organ, the brain, as it shut down. It, during that recording, it showed an astonishing snapshot of what happens when we die. This happened to a patient that was being treated for epilepsy. They were hooked up to an EEG. Now, this 87-year-old man's brain activity was being measured, and then he suddenly, out of nowhere, had a heart attack and died. That meant the 15 minutes around his death were recorded on the EEG. In the 30 seconds of either side of the patient's final heartbeat, so 30 seconds his heart was beating, and then for 30 seconds after his heart stopped beating, an increase in very specific brain waves was spotted. Now, these waves are known as gamma oscillations, and they are linked to things like memory retrieval, meditation, and dreams. Now, we can't say for sure whether dying people really do see their life flash before their eyes, but this particular study, which again was found accidentally, it seems to support that idea that when we die, our last thoughts are our life flashing before our eyes. It's almost like our brain is just purging our memories. And the thing is, this is the uplifting, I guess would be the word. The heart stops. There's no blood flowing through that brain. Yet the brain is still processing these memories. Now, through generating oscillations involved in memory retrieval, the thought is that the brain may be playing a last recall of important life events just before we die, similar to the ones reported in near-death experiences. These findings challenge our understanding of when exactly life ends. And it also generates an important question as it relates to the timing of organ donation. But listen to this. Our heart stops. We're done. We can't survive without our heart beating, right? Our heart stops, but yet our brain is still functioning. And what these recordings have shown, the area of the brain that generates our memories is essentially off the charts at this time. And again, it's almost like it's purging the memories, just clearing its cache. And all of the life events, the important life events that are stored in our brain are just rolled into our subconscious, I guess. At that point, it would be. That, in a way, is uplifting to me. Because I was watching my mother just struggle and struggle and struggle. It's almost, I don't want to say she was fighting to stay alive, because I knew at that point she was ready. She went through enough pain and she was ready. But it gives me a little bit of solace to know that there's a possibility that in her last moments, as we were just distraught, just begging her to let go, she's got her eyes closed and she's in her head and she's just replaying all the memories. She's replaying the memories of her mother, who she lost at 11 years old to cancer. Her mother died when my grandmother, who I never met, died when my mother was 11. So she's reliving all those memories. She's reliving the memories of when her and my dad started dating and got married, and all the births of her kids and her grandkids and her great-grandkids. And she had all those memories of the times with her father. Maybe that's why she stayed around so long, is she's just reliving all these memories going, yes, I remember that. I specifically remember I'm over there rubbing her hand, you know, and her hand is so cold. I know the end is coming. And she opens her eyes and just kind of looks at me, but through me. And I always wondered what was going through her head at that time. Maybe this is what it is. Maybe she was looking into heaven because she was seeing her dad as it, in the memories were playing back. Oh, dad. Oh, I remember. Oh, there's my mom. I remember that memory with my mom now. My mom was shorted time with her mother. And again, by the grace of God, she was given that time, that solace. We don't know what happens when we die because every one of us have been alive or are still alive. But this study or this accidental recording, it kind of gives me a little bit of hope. I've always said, and we just talked about this at work just this past week, I'm not afraid to die. I'm not. We're all going to. I mean, from the minute we're born, we are dying. I mean, let's be honest. My worry is a violent death. I don't want to die a very painful, violent death. I would love to just go to sleep and not wake up. That would be my ideal. Ideally, I would love to be in surgery, get that anesthetic. Oh, my gosh, that is the best sleep ever. And just not wake up. That's how I'd like to go. But, you know, everybody's got their own way, and we don't know. But the fact that in my last moments, I'm going to remember all the times with my mom and my dad, my brothers and my sisters and the great times we had, and then the birth of my kids, and I'm going to remember being so young and holding them and watching them grow and in the life milestones that they had. Those will be my last thoughts on this earthly realm. That's uplifting to me. It really is. I would like to think my mother had that solace when she was going, that it's going to be all right. You know, you had a great life and you're going to go to a better place. And for all of us listening that have lost somebody close, this topic or this subject gives us hope that, yeah, when they went, we might have been distraught. We might have been inconsolable. But they were enjoying that last hurrah. I'd like to think that as my mother lay there, just gasping for breath, she didn't feel a thing. She was in her own world as her brain was just purging her memories and giving them back to her as one last earthly gift. That's what I'm hoping. So have solace in that. All right, everybody. We are going to call it a show this week. Thank you, Justin, for all the information during the show. I didn't even get to James and Karen. That'll have to be next week. A lot of stuff going on. So, ladies and gentlemen, my beloved listeners, always be aware of the distraction. Look around you and see what else they're trying to distract you from, because we're being distracted. There's other stuff going on. It's a distraction of the ineptness of this administration, and it will get some people, but for the most of us, we see through it. So, hey, thanks for listening this week. Again, if you have a show that you do, if you have a podcast, if you have an event you want to promote, a book, anything you want to promote, contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Again, ghostseeker4@charter.net. And again, you make this show. Help make this show easier for me and more interesting for you. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net with show ideas and comments and concerns. Whatever you want to comment, concern, show idea. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. You have been listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. Pray for the people of Ukraine. They need it. I'll be back next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.